Just make a quick announcement. We're going to give away a laptop in this session. But the catch is you've got to go to this session and you've also got to go to Daniel's session tomorrow morning, which is at 10:40 tomorrow morning. He's got a session where he's talking about network card teaming and IPAM and stuff like that. So you're going to hear part one of this question today. We're going to give away this Acer S3. And if you stay tuned, we're going to give away another three of these over the next couple of days. And they'll be in the Windows Server sessions. If you go to any of Rick Clowes's sessions, he's at the back there in the green hat. He's got a Samsung Series 9 that he's going to give away in one across his three sessions. And then I'll announce what the other two laptops are shortly on Twitter. So you guys have got a pretty good chance of winning. It's a skill question. And I'll get off the stage and we're basically giving these away because Server 2012 launches today, so yay.
There's some caveats around who can receive it and who can't.
Yeah. So yeah, the terms and conditions, you can't be a government employee and you have to let us take a photo of you and you have to give us a business card so our auditors know that we're not giving away to our mates.
I'll just trot on it, hopefully. Still good. Okay, well, welcome everybody. I saw on Twitter today that there are 169 sessions here at TechEd, the downside being that you can only attend 16 of them. So thanks very much for coming along to this session. Judging by the crowd, I think we could have done with a bigger room, but thanks a lot for coming. My name is Tony Murray. I work as an independent consultant based in the beautiful and tropical city of Wellington. That is until tomorrow when I'm going to be buying my yacht to sail to the Caribbean on the strength of my winnings from Big Wednesday. So today we're talking about Active Directory changes to the UI. Now, there is a session right after this one with Rick Klaus or Klaus? Klaus in the, or Klaus, in the ballroom. I think it's ballroom two next. And he's talking about what's new in AD. So we've got a small amount of convergence. Mine focusing really on the UI changes, whereas Rick's primary focus is on the new stuff, including the platform changes. So I'd strongly encourage you, if you can, to go along to Rick's session after this. Okay, so I don't want to steal Rick's thunder, but this is just to point out that basically there are a whole raft of changes in AD and Windows Server 2012. Some of those pertain to the UI, but not many. So we're going to be talking today about simplified deployment. We're going to be talking about simplified management of AD as well. Okay, and again, it may look like there's a sort of hodgepodge of new features in AD 2012. I've pulled out the full list here, and again, Rick will cover all of these in a bit more detail. The ones in red are the ones that pertain to changes to the UI. So the agenda today looks like this. So we'll look at the changes in simplified deployment of Active Directory. Active Directory domain controllers and new versions of Active Directory, including the new functional level. Then we're going to look at sort of really what the main focus of today is, which is changes to the Active Directory Administrative Center. Now, if I could have a quick show of hands to find out who here is currently using the AD Administrative Center in Server 2008 R2. Okay, and how many of those you had your hands up prefer using Active Directory users and computers? Okay, so I think there's a recognition there that Active Directory Administrative Center, which came out in R2, was good, it was nice, it had some new features, but it maybe didn't go all the way that everyone was expecting. And hopefully what I want to get across today is that there are now some key changes in that tool that make it compelling for a replacement for users and computers. And finally, at the end, we're going to be talking a bit about, what's maybe missing from the UI, what changes can we expect in future versions. I think there's a recognition that, particularly with PowerShell, it's all pervasive now, PowerShell. Hopefully everyone here is getting into PowerShell and getting to grips with it, if you haven't already. But for certain tasks, particularly if you're not an AD administrator, you just want to go in and add somebody to a group or create a new user or something. You don't necessarily want to have to learn the PowerShell commands and AD commandlets that it would allow you to do that. So there's still a role for the UI. Okay, so in terms of takeaways, I think the AD Administrative Center has finally come of age. It's seamlessly integrated with PowerShell, as are many things in the new Server 2012 offering. PowerShell, however, is not going to go away anytime soon. So one of the really nice things about the AD Administrative Center, I'm going to use ADAC because I can't keep saying Administrative Center, is the fact that it is integrated with PowerShell and shows you the PowerShell output. And then you still need to use other tools for certain tasks. So for example, if you want to manage your sites and services environment, you still need the sites and services snap-in. If you want to manage trusts, you still need the domains and trusts snap-in. Okay, and finally, the really important takeaway is that you don't need a big investment in a new AD environment in order to take advantage of some of these new features. You can use them straight away, either with Windows 8 using the remote server administration tools, or with Windows Server 2012 as a member server, and we'll look at that. Okay, so again, I don't want to tread too much on Rick's toes on this, so we'll go through this quite quickly. But there are problems in the past, particularly when changing from one version of AD, say 2003 to 2008, or 2008 to 2008 R2, where you had a number of sort of fairly tricky requirements. And Microsoft Product Support fielded a lot of calls around problems with people not knowing which version of AD prep to run, which FSMO role holder needed to be targeted, et cetera, et cetera. And so they pushed the product team to make the whole experience of adding new domain controllers a lot easier. So the idea is that, if you think back on 2008 R2 and running AD prep, you needed to target the schema master. For forest prep, you need to target the infrastructure. For the domain prep, can anyone tell me why they chose the infrastructure master for domain prep? No, neither can I. It was a fairly arbitrary decision. I tried to get that answer out of the product group in the last couple of days, and they said that they wanted something that was independent from the other FSMO roles. They didn't want to confuse things with the schema master, but otherwise there was no good reason to do it. So those sort of things were just potentially confusing. So In Server 2012, the idea is that just want to simplify the whole process, make it consistent with the Windows PowerShell experience. Okay, so we'll go straight into the first demo, and that's talking about promoting a new domain controller. So you can't see that, can you? Okay, so what I have here is a member server within AD 2012 environment, and I'll show you the two-step process for promoting this to a domain controller. The first part is really to add the roles and features. And for those of you experienced with 2008 R2, there was that idea that you could add the Active Directory domain services role. But once you did that, nothing really happened. That didn't give you DC promo. You had to run DC promo as a separate step. Again, there's a two-step process. We add the roles and features, but DC promo is now being completely overhauled. Okay, so the first thing we want to do is just a quick tip for those of you who, like me, got really annoyed with the new Server 2012 having to see Server Manager when you log in every time. If you want a quick tip for how to get rid of that, if you click on Manage, go to Server Manager Properties, and just click the Do Not Start Server Manager automatically at logon. It took me about 20 minutes to find that. But anyway, thought I'd share that with you. So if we go to Add Roles and Features, got a whole lot of information there, which we can skip in future things. We've got choices of whether we want a role-based installation or a remote desktop installation. We're going to pick the role-based installation. And here, if you're not experienced with Server Manager in 2012, it allows you to manage a pool of servers. So if I had a pool of servers, you'd see the full list here. In my case, I just have the one. So grab my server, simply click on Active Directory Domain Services. Straight away, it pops up all of the features that I need for this role. Now, of course, I can do all of this in PowerShell. I'm just showing you the UI experience, which you'll probably want to do for the first one or two. So we'll click on Add Those Features. Still on Server Roles, then it tells me, OK, these are the features that you've chosen to install. Gives you some information about you really should have more than one domain controller and some other information. And away you go, confirmation, and then install. Because it takes a little while to do the installation, I've prepared another one which sort of picks up where that one left off. So we're back at Server Manager, assuming that we've now installed those roles and features. You see on the left-hand side of the screen, what we have is ADDS. And if we click on that, straight away we get a warning. If we look at the warning in detail, basically it says, yeah, you've done the roles and features installation for making this a new domain controller. What about promoting it to domain controller? So I want to show you something very quickly. If I go to command prompt, I'll do the right thing and run as administrator. If I type DC promo, what do you think is going to happen? Anyone? Absolutely nothing. Well done. Yeah. So basically it says, well, actually, no, you can't run DC promo from the command line anymore. It's no longer there. And the reason for that is that basically it's been completely overhauled by the AD team to simplify the whole experience. So the only way that I'm aware of to do it is either through PowerShell, as I mentioned, or through the UI and using this promotion process. So it's going to go away and evaluate that I've got all the right roles and features available to do the promotion. And I'm going to go ahead and add this to an existing domain. And again, it goes away and thinks about it for a little while. And as with server 2008 R2, it makes an assumption that you're going to want to make this a DNS server, and you're going to want to make this also a global catalog server. You also get, obviously, you need to set a directory services restore mode password. Actually, as a best practice, Microsoft recommends that you have a separate directory services restore mode password for each of your domain controllers and maintain them safely individually. That way, if one domain controller is compromised in some way, it doesn't mean they're all affected in the same way. Okay, so we're not going to make it an RODC. We're going to pick the site, type in a password. And away we go. It wants to know if I need to set up a DNS delegation. I don't in this case. Then it's asking for install from media options. I suspect Rick is going to cover install from media changes to server 2012. All I'll say is that if you've used install from media before to populate, say, a remote domain controller in a branch office to avoid the replication hit of the data over the network, then it's a much more streamlined process in server 2012. It's much less onerous in terms of the work that you have to do. Anyway, we're not installing from media in this case. We can choose which domain controller we want to replicate from if we have, maybe want to avoid a server holding the FISMO roles, for example, or if you've got one that has a bit more horsepower than another one. You pick the paths as you have done in previous versions. Okay, review the options, and here we've got an option to look at the PowerShell output, which is great. So this is one of the few areas of Server Manager which actually allows you to see the PowerShell output of the commands that you're making. But again, if you're deploying a number of domain controllers, probably, again, want to do the first one through Server Manager, and then if you're into PowerShell, really just go ahead and script the deployment of the rest of them. Okay, so next. And what it's doing now is basically, in the past where you had to be working on, the schema master to do your domain forest prep, and you had to work on the infrastructure master to do your domain prep, and you had to have certain credentials for each of those steps, this one is really just validating all of those things. I can do it remotely, and it's going to tell me if I have any problems with permissions or whatever. It's a much more streamlined process. Okay, so we've got standard warnings about cryptography if we have any Windows NT servers in our domain, and a DNS delegation, which I always look at the bottom and say, otherwise no action is required. So that's me. And then I click install, and away we go, and we've got the domain controller. So it's not a great deal different in terms of server 2008 R2. Server 2008 R2, obviously it's got all those complexities around introducing a new version of the operating system for AD. The DC promo experience is relatively streamlined now. Okay, so as I say, the main focus of this session is really on the changes to ADAC, AD Administrative Center. We know that it was first launched in 2008 R2, and the original goals of that were to be a full replacement for ADUC, or Active Directory Users and Computers. Whether or not it is open to question. There are a few features missing that we'll discuss in later on in this session. And really, they wanted to make it a much more efficient UI. If you look at users and computers, there's a lot of wizard-driven work in there, whereas now they're trying to reduce the overall number of clicks, make the experience for the user consistent with the Windows 7, Windows 8 Explorer. The idea is that, like Active Directory users and computers, it's going to be around for decades, with the idea that it will change as new features are evolved. And if you look at users of computers today, does it look very different to users and computers from Windows 2000? No, it doesn't. It's really sort of not really moved with the times. Okay, so the key changes are the introduction of an AD recycle bin, and we'll go into each of these in detail. The implementation of a PowerShell history viewer. The directory services team sort of finally made it to where the Exchange product team went into play with PowerShell view in Exchange Server 2007. And then we've got a UI now for fine-grained password policies. It also incorporates dynamic access control management. And I think Nathan Mercer, if you were at a session yesterday, covered a little bit about dynamic access control. It's beyond the scope of my session. Rick might cover a little bit of it, but really, really, really nice feature. So it's a move away from access control lists corresponding to SIDs to access control lists corresponding to claims. And it's a lot. It's a huge change to the way we do things today. And then there are some extra changes in ADAC that just basically improve the overall experience. Let's talk a little bit about the AD recycle bin. How many of you have enabled and are using the AD recycle bin in Server 2008 R2? Great. It's actually only a handful of you. That's a shame, because actually it's a really cool feature. And I suspect for those of you that didn't have your hand up there, it's possibly because you're not really at that functional level in terms of AD yet. But if you get there, enable recycle bin. It is a one-way move. So once it's enabled, you can't suddenly change your mind and say, well, we need to go back and disable it. It's not possible. There's also some limitations in that if you enable the recycle bin and that requires Server 2008 R2 forest functional level, you can only go back. You can't go back to the previous forest functional level of 2008. So the idea with the recycle bin is that it allows quick recovery of accidentally normally deleted objects. There is one big caveat. With a recycle bin, it's not a full replacement for traditional backup methods. So, for example, if you change the phone number of all your VIPs to the phone number of a sex chat line, and you go, AD recycle bin, brilliant, I'll just revert all those settings, it's not there because the objects are not deleted. So what you have to do is basically use your authoritative restore or do some scripting from maybe an AD snapshot or use a third-party tool set if you have one to do that change. So very, very clear point there. It's not a replacement for your traditional backups. It's an enhancement to that. But it does allow very quick recovery from accidental deletion. Now, for those of you that had your hand up about having enabled the recycle bin, how many of you have actually got documented procedures that allow you to quickly recover objects anytime there is an accidentally deleted object? Okay, so not as many hands. And I think that's the real problem, is that unless you're kind of really into PowerShell and you're a bit of a guru, it's not going to be something snappy and intuitive that you go to and go, right, well, I've fat-fingered the deletion of that organizational unit with all of those objects in it, and now I know the commands to get it back. It's not that quick and simple. You'd actually need to go and probably refer to your documentation or to the Technic documentation and work out exactly what you need to do. So you might need to, for example, restore, first of all, the objects higher in the tree, which is what you have to do. So if you deleted an OU with contents, what you have to do is basically restore that OU as a starting point and then restore the sub-objects or leaf objects within that OU. So you have to know what you're doing. So that was the complicating factor. And in Server 2012, with the change to ADAC, we now have that nice, rich UI experience. And for me, this is the kind of really, really killer feature of ADAC in 2012. It just works really nicely. I'll show you in a minute. Okay, so in terms of the requirements for what you need to run this, we need to have a 2008 R2 functional level, because as I mentioned before, you can only enable the recycle bin once you get to that forest functional level. You do need the ADAC, obviously, 2012. And by default, deleted object write lifetime is 180 days. So with the AD recycle bin, before recycle bin, you had tombstone lifetime. And now you have deleted object lifetime of 180 days by default, plus the tombstone lifetime. So if you're planning to extend the tombstone lifetime or the deleted object lifetime, just have a think before you do that. Because if you have a large amount of churn within your directory environment, that and you delete a lot of objects on a regular basis, maybe through an application, then that's going to grow the size of your ntds.dit file, so that Active Directory database. Now, generally, that's not a problem. The biggest dit that I've seen in New Zealand is around 30 gig, which with modern disks is not a big drama. But that's something to just have at the back of your mind if you decide, well, hey, this recycle bin feature is great. We're going to extend the deleted object lifetime out to 10 years or something. OK, so let's have a look at that in action. And before we do that, we'll have a quick look at some of the new features within the AD Administrative Center. OK, so for those of you who are familiar with the Metro interface, it's possible to sort of add and remove things to the start menu. I've added the AD Administrative Center there. Okay, is that visible from the back? Is that okay? Is it visible from the front without breaking your neck? Okay, so I've sort of enabled the desktop experience and made the fonts a bit larger and things, so it looks a bit more cluttered than it normally would do. But generally, it looks a lot like the old ADAC from 2008 R2, but with some of the color sucked out. That's the kind of view I have of it. Okay, so as a starting point, a lot of this is customizable in terms of the UI. So if we have a look at the content, let's say we get bored of looking at the welcome to the AD Administrative Center thing. We can switch that off simply by doing that. We can bring it back simply by doing that. And that's the way a lot of the sort of what they call sections and tasks work within ADAC. Basically, you can add and remove the things that are relevant to the way that you work. Now, we'll talk a bit later about sort of what we'd like to see in the future of the UI. But one of the things is that I don't personally feel the customizations go quite far enough. I think it'd be nice to have, for example, your own PowerShell snap-ins that allow tasks to do things that you want to do. So an example would be, say, to enable a mailbox when creating a new user, something that was possible with Windows 2003 Active Directory users and computers together with Exchange 2003. And things like that sort of are relevant to your working environment. And I think what the product team have done here is they've targeted a sort of the 80-20 rule and just trying to please most of the people for most of what they do. In the left-hand side, we have two views. So we've got a tree view, which is the traditional hierarchy view. And so we have a domain naming context called Contoso. And you can see that we have all of the OUs and containers within that naming context. And that's the kind of view that's very similar to Active Directory users and computers. Now, the view that I prefer is the list view, and that really allows you to sort of add and remove the things that are relevant to you. So we can do that by just right-clicking there and choosing Add Navigation Nodes. So if I work typically for most of the time with ADAC within my user's OU, what I can do is this. I can sort of browse to where it is. They're my standard users. I can add them. OK, so now I have them in my list view. But even better, I can just rename that. I'm not renaming the OU. I'm renaming my added navigation node. So I can just call it my users. And then when I click on that, basically, it brings up that OU. And for me, that's quite a nice view, because typically within the hierarchy of your domain naming context, you have a lot of things that are not relevant to you. So it's quite nice just to have the things that are relevant. So if we look at creating a new user, for example, that brings up, instead of a wizard, this idea that we've got a form of some kind. And we can add and remove the sections that we're interested in. So one of the things that, and I keep sort of harping on about things that may be missing, but for example, it would be nice, I think, to have a customization in there that says, well, let me expose the attributes within my schema that are relevant to my organization. So you've got a huge range here, which is great. But if you want to target specific attributes that are not there, what you have to do is create the user or provision the user, then go back in again and maybe use the attribute editor to populate those missing attributes. So it's a two-step process, whereas I think in the future, you know, a nice change to the UI would be to have a one-step process. Okay, so the other thing, just before I get onto the recycle bin, really nice global search. I can type something in here, say Alex, and that does an ambiguous name resolution search in the background for Alex and brings up anything with Alex in the surname. If we look at convert to LDAP, we can see that, yep, that's our LDAP search. We can also type our own in there. I like working with LDAP. Does anyone else like working with LDAP? I just think it's a lot cleaner. And certainly if you look at the PowerShell commandlets, when searching for users, I always use the LDAP filter rather than the built-in PowerShell filter, because I think it's a little bit more powerful. So if we apply that search that I've just put in, some fairly important high-profile contacts appear. The main downside is that I can't really save that LDAP, well, I can't save that LDAP query in the way that I can save a standard query. So I'll just show you that very quickly. If I was searching for Alex, for example, as before, I could then just type that and do Alex, click save, and then I could go back into ADAC at a later time and expose that save. And you can sort of use that query to define your own views of the type of things that you want to see. And that's why I think it's a real shame they haven't allowed us to save an LDAP query. Anyway, right, so let's go back quickly to my users. Another really nice feature is the ability to add things to the view. And they've exposed a number of common and relatively uncommon attributes for you to choose. So, for example, a lot of organizations work with employee ID. So I can just simply add that to the view I have of my users OU. I can also add, for example, department. That's as far as it goes. That's the full list that you can see there. Again, I would probably like to see sort of all of the attributes that I've got within my environment, including those schema customizations that I've made specifically for my AD. Anyway, that's enough of the general changes around users ADAC. What we'll do now is just go ahead and blow away an OU and see how quickly it is to recover it using the AD recycle bin. So within, I've got an underscore Contoso view here. External contacts, that looks like a likely option to delete. Sure you want to delete it? You'll have to use a subtree control, so I say yes. I can tell straight away that OU wasn't protected from accidental deletion. So the protection from accidental deletion is built in. So I actually had to go in the background and switch that off before I could delete the OU. But now that I have done that sort of rather foolish thing, I can go to the deleted objects container. And that deleted objects container is only exposed through an LDAP control. So that's why you don't typically see it within Active Directory users and computers, or you don't see it at all. You can expose it in something like ldp.exe, which is an LDAP browser UI. But otherwise, it's a fairly hard thing to get to. Okay, so now we've got that deleted. We can see we've got some other deleted objects from another time. A really nice thing is that we can look at the date and time step for the deletion, and we can sort on that value. So I've got all these deleted at 2:19. And if I just select all of them, that's included there. So that's basically the external contacts OU itself, so the OU object itself, as well as those contact objects. And to get them back, it's as really simple as right-click and restore. So then when I go back into that view, basically, I've got the external contacts back. And if you think that's not just because it's not refreshed and I'm lying, then I can click the refresh and show you that they're still there. So, I mean, do we think that's pretty cool? I actually think that's great, just in terms of the simple way in which you can restore objects. And you don't have to think about which order those objects are restored in. Okay. Okay, so we know that Exchange, if you're familiar with Exchange, how many of you work with Exchange quite regularly? Okay, I would have expected you all to be in Scott's session on Exchange 2013, but thanks for coming to this one. But basically, with Exchange from 2007, it was possible through the Exchange Management Console, when you made performed an action, it would show you the PowerShell output. And the Active Directory product team sort of thought, well, that's pretty cool. We'll add that into our UI. But they actually went one step further and included the ability to see past commands as well as the immediate command that you've done, which is really quite good. Okay, so the main idea with the PowerShell History Viewer is that it sort of leads you to learn about PowerShell. And I keep banging on about PowerShell, but it really is all pervasive and it'll be there for a long time. So, you know, the sooner we get to grips with the AD commandlets and how they work, the better. And we can integrate those with our scripts through the learnings that we get through the UI. The good thing about the PowerShell History Viewer is that all we need to run it is the Active Directory Administrative Center from 2012. So that's available with Windows 8 with the remote server administration tools or from a Windows 2012 domain member. You don't need to have the functional level. You don't need to have a domain controller even for 2012. As long as you've got basically the Active Directory web servers, which all 2008 R2 DCs have by default. And if you install the managed gateway service, you can have your 2003 R2 or 2003 Service Pack 2 and 2008 Service Pack 2 domain controllers installed with a web service. That'll work on those too. So it's something you can go away and work with straight away without needing to upgrade to the latest and greatest version of the operating system, which is quite often a bar for organizations if they have a conservative approach to the adoption of new technologies. Okay, so a quick look at the PowerShell History Viewer. That wasn't so good, was it? Okay, you may have seen it lurking down the bottom of the screen here, so all I need to do is maximize it. So what we have here is it's basically a raw output. It's something that lives in the memory of the session. So it would have been nice, I think, if they could have written the PowerShell output to a file or put it somewhere that exposed it potentially to other tools and interfaces. But the way they've done it is to sort of basically give a raw output that's in memory, and you can look at the detail. And the good thing is that you can copy it. So if I copy that, I can then go, for example, to the new PowerShell Integrated Scripting Environment, or ISE. I can just paste that in. And straight away start working with that command from the PowerShell History Viewer. So in this instance, basically, this is an object deletion, so remove, which I did earlier, obviously. So yeah, not too much more to say on the PowerShell History Viewer. I will show you one thing, which is I have this idea called start and end task. It took me a while to figure out what that does. It doesn't really start a task. Basically, it's a flag. So if you're working with a PowerShell History Viewer and you say, well, I want to do the sequence of things so that I can then go back into PowerShell in my integrated scripting environment and use those, then I'll use the start and end tag as start task and end task as tags to do that. So just very quickly, I could do new. So that's my start tag. I could then start doing some other changes in AD and then do end task. And I could browse my PowerShell History Viewer for those tags, grab whatever's in between, copy it, and paste it elsewhere. Okay, so fine-grained password policy. This is something that was introduced quite a while back in the original version of 2008. It was introduced to work around a limitation with AD, whereby with a domain password policy, it applied to everyone in the domain. And it wasn't possible, for example, to have a separate password and lockout policy for a certain set of users. So now, the feedback from the users, basically, to Microsoft was, well, you know, actually different types of user object have different characteristics and different requirements for password and account lockout. So, for example, for your service accounts, assuming you're not using managed service accounts, which were new in 2008 R2, or group managed service accounts, which are new in 2012, you basically were limited to using the domain password policy. So fine-grained password policy was a task that was given to the directory services product group after they'd split from the group policy team. So the way it's been implemented is not through group policy, which is kind of what most people would expect, knowing that the domain and password and account lockout policy lives in the default domain policy. So instead, it's outside of that. It's all used within AD. So if you look in the system container in the advanced view in Active Directory Users and Computers or in ADAC, you'll see a password settings container object. And that's basically a container for your password settings objects, and that's where they live in AD. So one of the kind of difficult concepts to get around with fine-grained password policy is that instead of applying the policy to OUs in the same way that you would with group policy, you have to apply those password setting objects to either groups or users. And so it's a slightly different way of doing things. You can sort of provide a workaround for that by having an OU watcher script, which you run on a scheduled basis, which basically if you have one called, say, accounts, and you've got all of the, say, accounting team's accounts within a certain OU, you basically have that scheduled script that monitors changes to that OU and populates a group based on those changes. But yeah, it's a slightly different way of thinking about things. Now, administration of FGBP, as it's called, was originally in 2008 a complete nightmare because realistically the easiest method to do it was to use the ADSI edit tool. And that was a method by which you populate the raw attribute values. And it was completely non-intuitive. So, I mean, I had to sit there with ADSI edit and a TechNet article to figure out the syntax for the population of specific attributes. Things improved vastly with the advent of Server 2008 R2 and the AD commandlets, because there are now AD commandlets for managing password settings, which is really helpful. But again, if you're not a PowerShell person, it's a bit obscure. So this is why in 2012 we now have integrated into ADAC a UI for managing password settings objects. In other words, it greatly simplifies the process. And again, the requirements are fairly light. So we just need a functional level for the domain of 2008, and we need the 2012 administrative center. So let's have a quick look at that. Okay, so as I mentioned, the password settings objects, so password settings container, lives way down in the system container. Now, I'm browsing to it, but can I equally use global search to search for it? So there it is. Okay, you can see that I've already got one password settings object for my service accounts. They have a much more, certainly in my case, a much more stringent requirement for password complexity. I'll create a new one. And again, presents you with this form-like view. And you can see that that's, in terms of the settings for password and account lockout, it's very, very similar to what you would see in the group policy editor in terms of the ability to populate those values. So let's have one called resource accounts. There's an R in resource, apparently. Precedence, and the value has to be more than zero. And I don't think it has a reasonable upper limit, but basically the idea with precedence is that you could get into a situation where somebody's created password settings objects more than one and linked them to the same group, and in which case the resultant set of policies uses that precedence value to work out which one to assign. So the lower the value, the higher the priority. We'll just give it 10 for this one. Then we populate our other values. We might want to have a number of failed attempts, say 20, before we lock out the account. Then we can decide, right, we'll link that to a group or a user. In this case, we've got a group called resource accounts, hopefully. Link that. Okay, so that's that is really about 100 times quicker than it would have been using ADSI edit. Then if we go to, for example, global search and look for one of those resource accounts. So we've got a meeting room 101. And if I right-click, I've got a menu option there called View Resultant Password Settings. So this would do that sort of conflict resolution, looking at the different precedence values, and would pick out which one was the winner. So again, I think that's quite a nice way of doing simplifying things within the UI. Okay, so I had a chat with a guy called Dean Wells, who's a product group manager within the directory services product team, the other day. And I was asking him what was coming up next in terms of the AD Administrative Center, with the hope of sharing that with you guys to a certain extent. And he said, well, he said, you know, we've just finished the release of 2012, we need a bit of a lie down, and you know, it's just a bit. Anyway, they haven't appointed the PM who looks after the UI yet. So what I said to him was, look, you know, I'll give you my feedback of what I'd like to see in the UI. And certainly, I'm around for most of the conference, so if you want to share your thoughts with me on what you want to see, I'm happy to provide that back to the product group. But here's what I want to see. So I've already mentioned it would be nice to expose custom attributes during provisioning. So if I've extended the schema and I've got a new attribute called inside leg measurement, I want to expose that through the UI. Create custom actions. I mentioned that thing of integrating with Exchange. Exchange has got PowerShell. AD's got PowerShell. ADAC uses PowerShell. It should be possible to have that kind of integration. Workflows would be great. So, for example, you know we have privileged protected groups in Active Directory. Schema admins is one. Enterprise admins is another. Wouldn't it be cool if we could, whenever we make changes to, say, enterprise admins, have some kind of workflow that goes off to somebody who can give the approval for making a change to that group membership or not? Then again, sort of Active Directory administrative center can't do everything. We already mentioned sites and services, domains and trusts, but there are a whole lot of other tools out there that are used to manage different parts of AD. NTDS util, ADS iEdit. We've got all those command line options, DS query. And it'd be nice to have sort of a one-stop shop that could manage all of those. It's the kind of nirvana, and I'm not sure how far they'll get with the next version, but certainly I'd like to see them heading in that direction. And one of the limitations, for example, of the recycle bin is that it's only possible to recover objects quickly that have been deleted from the domain partition. And we know in Active Directory we've also got a configuration partition where you could potentially go and delete the whole of your Exchange organization, which would make you popular. But if you had the AD recycle bin able to get that in a couple of seconds, who would notice? You know, so that kind of thing would be good. So then, support for group managed service accounts. So Rick, I think, is most likely to cover group managed service accounts. It's the new managed service accounts that were introduced in 2008 R2. Because it's out of scope for me, I won't cover it, but it's a new feature in 2012, and I would have liked to have seen it in the UI. Again, I mentioned that I do a lot of work with LDAP, and it would be nice to be able to save those LDAP queries to the ADAC saved query feature. And one really kind of annoying feature is that, you know, in Active Directory users and computers, you've had this ability to copy a user. And how many of you use user templates in Active Directory user and computers to create new users? Anyone? Okay, a few people. So it's a really useful feature where you create a template user that's a member of certain groups and has the right attributes populated, and then you copy it and paste it and create a new user, and you've got a good set of attributes ready to go without having to populate those. So it'd be nice to have that feature back in. Okay, so Rick will talk to this slide as well, if you go to his session next. I think the really sort of important thing I wanted to pull out here is that straight away with, you know, Windows 8 and with those remote server administration tools or a 2012 domain member, without having to extend the schema, go to domain functional levels or forest functional levels or introduce even 2012 DCs, you get a lot of those cool ADAC features. So I'd encourage you all to sort of go away back to your organizations that you work with and have a play with it in production once you've introduced those first new operating systems. For the simplified deployment, obviously you need a 2012 DC. Okay, so my personal view is that, you know, I think ADAC has come of age. I think it's a true replacement now for users and computers, and it's particularly compelling with those new features, particularly, I think, the recycle bin. Don't forget that PowerShell focus, and, you know, I would encourage all of you to get to grips with the AD commandlets to really understand a lot more about that, how to manage things with PowerShell. Okay, so for the time being also, still have to use sites and services and domains and trusts and so on. Okay. So it's time now for the question. I've finished my presentation. And as Nathan mentioned, in order for you to win the laptop, you have to answer a question. Now, the first part of the question is, and I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget, what is the name of the executable for the Active Directory Administrative Center? Don't answer now, because you'll need both answers for when you want to win the laptop at Daniel's session tomorrow. But yeah, so the question again is, what is the name? What is the executable name for the Active Directory Administrative Center? Now, I suspect Bing or Google might help you with that. But either way, I can be bribed. So I've come to the end of my presentation. We've probably got a bit of time for questions, so I'm happy to have you fire them at me now, or I'll stay for a little while afterwards as well. But thanks very much for your attention and time. Thank you. So any questions? So the question is, for the global search query, is it possible to have ands and ors? No. It's fairly basic, the query. As I say, you can do the full LDAP expression. It's just not, you're not currently able to save that as a query. So the, in fact, I can show you very quickly the list of things that are, it is possible to save. So if we go to the global search, oh, we're there. Okay, it's possible to, there's a drop-down option there, which I didn't mention before, where you can do add criteria. And it's got some pre-canned searches in there which are quite useful. So, for example, there is one that says, you know, people who, you can search for inactive accounts by using this one called users with enabled accounts who are not logged on for more than a given number of days. And you can add that. So there it defaults to 15 days, but I can change that to whatever. And then I can continue to add criteria to that search. So, for example, it exposes a number of popular attributes that I can then say, well, you know, and the employee ID must contain or may contain, starts with, and I can change that to equals n. So you can do it to a certain extent with the built-in things, but it's really limited in that it only exposes a sort of a subset of the overall available number of attributes that you can have. So it's, yeah, like I say, I think it'd be really cool to do the LDAP way and save the search, but it's not possible currently. Any other questions? Yeah. Oh, sorry, there's just one over here. Hi. Yeah, sure. I think I can. That one. Yeah, sure. Yeah, as I say, Rick Carlson in his session will be talking to that. So Rick will be covering this in a bit more detail in his session, which is up next. Okay, yeah. I think also they'll be making the sessions available online afterwards, so you can always, you know, watch it in the office next week. Sorry, hi. Yes, and that's available on TechNet. So a lot of them are around the management of sites and services. I think there will be I don't think there's a separate session at this conference, but if you, a lot of the sessions from the US TechEd are available online, and there was one specifically on the PowerShell changes in AD. It's available on TechNet. I think, I'm not sure sort of how well formatted it is. Actually, if you take one of my business cards, I'll send you the information. I'll grab that in a sec. Any other questions while we're here?
Is there a way to copy the objects in the OU and modify certain fields to create a different OU with all the newly modified objects?
Yeah. So the question is it possible to copy an OU that has a given set of attributes and transform those?
Yeah, so you have user 1, user 2, user 3, and OU.
Yeah.
And you want to copy all those objects and put them to a different OU called user 1A, user 2A, user 3A, with different subwords.
Okay, yeah. So the question is it possible to take, say, users 1, 2, and 3 from one OU, create a new OU with modified versions of those, your new objects that are slightly modified, so 1A, 1B, 1C, or 1A2. Yeah, but still have those attributes there.
Or slightly modified,
but with the same ID. Yeah, okay. So basically you want to use one set of users as a template to create other users? Yeah. No, is the short answer to that. But you can't do it through the UI, but that would be a relatively easy thing to script using PowerShell. Certainly, copying objects as source and putting them to a different target with transformations is something that PowerShell really does well through the PowerShell command line. I'm afraid you're stuck with that for the... Okay, any other questions? Great, thank you. I'll give you my...